and welcome to Comic Talk Today for Monday, May 28, 2018. Happy Memorial Day if you're in the U.S. This is the episode of the week in which I talk about some of the books that I read on the last new comic book day, the top of the pile. And this week I've got quite a few books that I want to talk about. There's two Marvel, one IDW, one Valiant, one DC, three Image, and one Aftershock. And I'm going to kick it off with the IDW book, and that is Delta 13, written by Steve Niles with art by Nat Jones. And this is a book that I said I was pretty excited to read on last week's Comic Predictor segment. I've been a huge fan of Steve Niles over the years, so I was very excited to see him tackle something else. Because while he's written a bunch of stuff, generally what I like from him is the vampire stuff, the 30 Days of Night stuff. And so I was very excited to see what he would do with an outer space story. And I gotta say, I wasn't disappointed, but I was left with a lot. But I wanted a lot more out of this story. So basically, it's set in the future at some point, an undisclosed time, and it follows a ship of people who are apparently miners, asteroid miners. And while they're traveling through space in between jobs, they come up upon this asteroid, they go inside it, and it looks like there's weird stuff going on because the makeup of the asteroid is a little off. And there's giant tunnels dug through the asteroid. There is also this giant metal door inside one of the tunnels. And that's kind of where the issue leaves off. So I gotta say, for a first issue, I really expected quite a bit more. But I do know that Steve Niles does like to tell stories that last quite a while. So I wasn't really expecting this first issue to be like an end-all, be-all story. But I'm glad I read it. I thought it was an interesting first issue. Although, I gotta say, I did want more out of the story. And that kind of didn't happen. So I was a little disappointed by that. But overall, I thought it was pretty enjoyable. We do get quite a bit of character development between all the members of this crew. And the mystery that's being set up is pretty interesting. I do love a good sci-fi story, of course. And I think once the series gets going, maybe in another issue or so, it's going to end up being really, really interesting because I do love a mystery, especially if it's set in space. So that's Delta 13 from IDW, and I'm going to have to give this one a 3 out of 5. Let's move on to Shadow Man number 3. This is from Valiant Comics, written by Andy Diggle, with art by Steven Segovia and Adam Polina. And I got to say, I was really, really down on the first issue. I read the second one because I was so down on the first one, but I'm really, really enjoying the series. It is really nice as a longtime Valiant fan. I've been reading Valiant since 93, and the stuff that the current incarnation of Valiant did with Shadow Man and Jack and the Loa and all that stuff didn't quite grab me in the first couple of attempts that they've done, but Shadow Man's been gone from comic book publishing for quite a few years. And this is a fantastic series right now. I am really digging it. I think what Andy Diggle has really keyed in on is the fact that what makes Shadow Man really interesting is the voodoo aspects of the Shadow Man character. And of course, we're getting a lot of mythology here. We're learning a lot about the Loas. We're learning about the Pantheon of Gods. We're learning a lot about the Dead Side. And I think this book is really starting to take shape and really becoming something special. If you like magic stuff, but you kind of don't like the way other publishers do it, maybe, this might be up your alley. Because I think the way that they delve into the mythology of the Loas, of the voodoo religion, is extremely fascinating. And in this issue, we do have the Abiters show back up. The Abiters haven't been seen in the series so far, but they're kind of the group of people that were in the shadows looking over Shadow Man and making sure that he stayed within his abilities, that he didn't overreach. They kind of controlled him and the Loa itself. And in this issue, of course, after the second issue, Shadow Man gets sent back to the Dead Side by Baron Samedi and this giant monster that takes him there. And so, you know, this third issue is a little bit like a crime heist type story, which I really love as well. And Shadow Man decides he's going to go into Baron Samedi's mansion in the Dead Side and try to regain his scythe, his powerful weapon that would allow him to break through the barrier that Baron Samedi is using to keep him from returning to the real world. Now, I do have an issue with that in particular, because the thing is, in three issues, we've already seen this happen like two or three times, where like Jack comes back into Earth, and then he gets kicked back into the dead side, and then he somehow manages to get out, and then he gets kicked back. And I wish that wasn't being overused as much as it has been. But the story itself is actually really interesting, and I gotta say, the art in this book is really, really fantastic. Steven Segovia's been doing it the whole time. In this issue, he's got some help from Ed and Polina. And, you know, it's oftentimes that publishers want to have a couple of artists on a book to keep it in schedule. We see that a lot in Marvel and DC now that they're doing, like, you know, an issue every 2 or 3 weeks. And it's tough for an artist to do that. But the thing that Valiant does really well is that whenever they use two artists in a book, they do it where it actually means something. And in this issue, we've got the stuff that happens on the Earth realm being illustrated by Steven Segovia. And then the stuff that happens in the dead side is Adam Polina. And I really love Adam Polina's art. I mean, I love Steven Segovia's as well. But Adam Polina's got, I don't know, there's some kind of magic in that. And it fits really well into the dead side scenes that we see him draw. Now, this issue does touch upon quite a few things from previous incarnations of it. So we have Jack talking to Baron Samedi and one of the other gods of the Voodoo Pantheon, where we get a little more backstory about this character, about the Loa. You know, Jack talks a little bit about when he killed his father, that happened in Shadowman End Times, about the stuff that he's been doing in the dead side of the last few years. And of course, we see the resurgence of the love story that we had, I think it popped out towards the end of the Shadowman series and then into End Times, where Jack and Alyssa were kind of a thing. And I remember when that first happened, a lot of people, a lot of Valiant fans were a little disappointed because never, ever had we seen any inclination that these two people were kind of a couple, and all of a sudden they're thrust into this romantic relationship. Well, I think that aspect has been made pretty clear from issue one in this current series, and that is played upon again in this third issue. Now, in issue one and two, Alyssa kind of was like, listen, Jack, I'm not down with this relationship thing. Let's just figure out this Baron Samedi thing. Let's get you back on Earth, and let's get this problem resolved. But we do see that she definitely has feelings for Jack in this particular issue, and I like that. I think it plays pretty well. Now that we've seen Jack and the Shadowman Loa be gone for several years, coming back, I think Andy Diggle's doing a fantastic job at recreating this mythology in a way that makes sense. And, you know, it's particularly hard. If you've read a lot of the Shadowman stuff, it was kind of misused in many ways. There were quite a few writers that tried to tackle this book, and the book went in many different directions. And I often wondered, like, if they bring Shadowman back, how can they make this thing make sense? I think Andy Diggle's doing that. So because of that, I got to give this book a 4 out of 5. And again, the Shadowman number 3 from Valiant Comics. I'm really digging it, man. I'm extremely happy that they're doing this thing. Still not my favorite Valiant book. That still goes to Ninja K. But this is definitely in second place right now. And, you know, Valiant's not publishing as much as they used to. I think they're only doing like 5 or 6 books on a given month. But I think that works better for them because they can focus more and make the books that they actually do have going on a little bit better, I think, a little more polished. And of course, next week, or rather this week, is the start of the Harbinger Wars 2 event, the summer event. And I think that's going to be the prelude issue was quite good. So we'll see how that goes. Again, Shadowman number 3 from Valiant Comics, that is going to be a 4 out of 5. I want to move into Image first, and you know, I'm talking about these books not so much because I really dug them, but I think there's some interesting stuff going on. Actually, one I really did dig. And, you know, I said 3. I think I'm going to talk about 4 books from Image. And the first one is Hit Girl, number 4. This is written by Mark Millar with art by Ricardo Lopez-Ortiz, or Mark Millar, as some people like to say. Listen, it's Mark Millar. That's how he pronounces his name, so that's what it is. And this is the end of the arc. And I'm not going to talk too much about the book. This, I don't think Hit Girl itself has been really very good. The only reason I put it on this list is that I learned that Jeff Lemire is going to be taking over the book with issue 5. And I was like, well, if that's the case, I'm going to give it a shot, but I want to know kind of what's going on. So I went back and I read Hit Girl 1 through 4, and I don't think it was particularly well done. The art, I did enjoy the art. Ricardo Lopez Ortiz, I think, is a great artist and fits the style and atmosphere of this book very well. But in terms of the writing, I wasn't a huge fan. And it was kind of just a typical hit girl story. Uber violent. There's heads being blown off pretty much in every single page. A lot of gangsters and drugs and, again, heads being blown up. So that was fine. But I did enjoy the way that the book ended, because now that this arc is over and we've kind of resolved that story, issue 5 will be a brand new arc to the series, and it's going to have a new creative team. I can't remember who the artist is, but like I said, Jeff Lemire is going to be writing the book, and I'm a big fan of Jeff Lemire's stuff, and I don't know how he finds the time to write as much as he does. I mean, the man's doing like 8 or 9 books right now. It's just insanity. He's got to be doing like an issue of comics a day, to be fair, in order to give himself like enough time to read it and proofread it and send it to an editor and whatever else. His schedule must be absolutely crazy. But the way that Hit Girl number 4 ends is she decides that now that she's done with this mob boss guy and resolved the whole backstory with this mom who was trying to avenge her son's death at the hands of this drug dealer, she decides she's going to go into Canada. And so that's when Jeff Lemire is going to be picking up the book with the next issue. And of course, Jeff is Canadian. So I'm looking forward to see how he tackles the story. I think Hit Girl is very different than anything else that Lemire has done. Now, he does write Bloodshot Salvation over at Valiant, and that's coming to an end. But, you know, that book is also kind of violent. But in many respects, it is about characters more than it is story. And I think from the stuff that I've read over the years from Hit Girl, it really is just a let's just have fun and watch this little girl blow people up and say bad words. So I do hope that Jeff Lemire brings a new level of depth into Hit Girl with the next issue. If I had to rate this issue and really the arc overall, I'll probably just give it like a 3 out of 5. It was fine. Like it's an okay read, but I don't think that I would have continued reading this. I remember I read the first issue and then I dropped it, and I only decided to go back because of Jeff Lemire. So we'll see how that goes. Again, Hit Girl from Image Comics is going to be a 3 out of 5. The other Image book that I read that I didn't quite enjoy as much was TMNT Urban Legends number 1. This is written by Gary Carlson with art by Frank Fosco, inks by Eric Larson, colors by Adam Gawoski, and letters by Chris Eliopoulos. And like I said on the Comic Predictor, because I did have this on my list, this is a retelling of the 90s Image black and white series. I think it came out like in the mid to late 80s, I want to say. I can't remember. And, you know, I wanted to talk about it because I had it on my list, and I don't know if I expected too much or what, because I don't remember reading the Image series. In fact, I don't think I've ever read a single issue of it. So I was looking forward to it because of that, because I think what IDW has done with the current incarnation of the Turtles is really, really interesting. I've been digging that book quite a bit. I do buy it in singles. I also buy the oversized hardcovers when they come out. And by the way, those hardcovers are absolutely fantastic. If you want to give the Turtles a shot, then I highly recommend you pick up those IDW hardcovers. But, you know, this story just didn't grab me. I think the problem is that this is a very much a typical 90s comic. The writing is not very polished. The dialogue, it has a lot of wannabe witty one-liners that just aren't funny when translated, you know, 30, 35 years later. Not even that long. I'm making that up. 25 years later. The art, I think, would fit very well in that era, but it does. I don't think it translates well enough to today. It didn't feel right to me. And for that reason, I didn't quite enjoy it. I did exchange a couple words with Paul, because Paul, of course, is a huge fan of the Turtles. And, you know, he said that it was a fun book. You know, if this is your niche, then you probably enjoyed it. But he agreed that it also wasn't the best of books, because it is very 90s. And for anyone that knows Paul from our chats on the Valiant Central podcast, rest in peace, or, you know, when he does comics in black and white now, he doesn't make any excuses for the fact that he really hates 90s comics. And you know, even for him, it was a little tough. But like I said, he enjoyed it. If you're a Turtles fan, you might enjoy it. The cool thing is that these stories are being retold in color instead of just black and white. And of course, like I mentioned in the comic predictor last week, there's going to be three additional issues at the end of the series, which will actually wrap up the story that never finished while it was being put out by Image. So that's a plus if you're a TMNT completist, I suppose. But if I had to rate this one up, I did not like it. This might be the first book that I go below a 3 out of 5 on. So TMNT Urban Legends number 1 is going to be a 2 out of 5 for me. Didn't hate it, but I just really did not like it. And I think there's a lot of great Image, or a lot, well, yes, Image, yes, but a lot of great 90s comics that I have reread even recently and still thoroughly enjoy. So it's not an era thing for me. This did not work at all for me. I don't think it translated very well. I want to briefly talk about Skyward number 2, also from Image Comics. This is written by Joe Henderson with art by Lee Garbett, colors by Antonio Fabella, letters by Simon Bolan. And this is, of course, the story, it's a near future story of a world in Earth that has reduced gravity. And I just wanted to briefly touch upon it because, you know, the first issue I thought was really interesting, but a lot of times when I'll pick up a first issue, I either forget about a second issue or, you know, the second one, once the story actually gets going, it becomes a little less interesting once the technicalities, the newness of a series kind of wears off pretty quick for me. But I picked up issue 2 of Skyward, and I thought it was really great. It actually expands quite a bit on this world. We go from pretty much up in the sky, which is where most of the first issue takes place, up in at the top of skyscrapers, and we actually get down to street level, and we learn about Willa's dad's partner, who also knew that this gravity shift was coming 20 years prior. We learned that while her dad has been stuck in the apartment for 20 years, not wanting to go outside and trying to find a way to fix this whole gravity thing, his old partner actually has become a millionaire as a result. He created like gravity boots and all this kind of stuff so people can still live down on the ground. We learn a little bit more about what it was like to, you know, in those first days of this low gravity thing, from Willa's friend and co-worker who had to travel like 100 miles to get to Chicago, and how tough that was and how many people that she lost along the way. So I like that because, you know, I'm always saying I'm a big fan of post-apocalyptic stuff, and in some respects this kind of is. And I think most of those kind of stories tell us the story of what happens in the early days of the post-apocalypse. In Skyward, all that is in the past, and it's kind of irrelevant. Of course, it affects the characters, but, you know, we're living in the present, and these people have already adapted to the changes. And I think it makes for a really interesting story. It's still tons of fun. Lee Garbett's art is still, bar none, one of the best in the industries. He's just freaking fantastic. And I do like the new twists that we're getting in the series. Of course, her dad's business partner is not a very nice man. He's been looking for her dad for the past 20 years. And so it does seem like he's going to be the villain of the story. Of course, if you're familiar with this kind of thing, it was kind of telegraphed when she said that she was going to go find him. I kind of already assumed that he would end up being the bad guy. But Skyward still really going strong on the second issue. I'm going to have to give this one a 4 out of 5. And next up, I'm just going to spoil the score right now, because I'm going to say this might be my book of the week. And I don't think this came out last week, but I was a little behind, and I ended up catching up on things. But that is The Dead Hand number 2 from Image Comics as well. This is, of course, written by Kyle Higgins, art by Stephen Mooney, colors by Jordi Belair, and letters by Clayton Cowles. And this is that crazy, how can I describe this? It's like a Cold War era spy story, except it takes place in the present, so the Cold War is over. But there's a mystery looming in the background, as we learned at the end of the first issue, when we see that this town that some of these spy characters are living in with their families is in the middle of Siberia. And with issue 2, we get a little bit more about why they're in Siberia. And we learn a little bit more about what the Dead Hand is. And I don't want to spoil it, because I think the revelation was really well done. In particular, with a new character that we meet towards the end of the story, a little kid that we meet, who may not exactly what he seems to be. Actually, we learn from the last page, he is definitely not what he seems to be. But when as soon as he's revealed, I'm like, oh my God, if this is that thing, this book is... And it was that thing. So if you pay close attention to the book, it is, you can assume who this little boy is pretty early on when you meet him. But once it's revealed, like, yeah, now I kind of understand what's going on in this book. And I think there's still going to be a lot more to reveal. It's kind of hard to talk about this, you know, because I think telling any of the elements of the story itself would give up a lot of the spoilers of what makes the Dead Hand so good. But God, issue two of the Dead Hand, which is really, really great. I love this French spy that we get to know a lot about. And of course, she's connected to one of the girls that we saw in the first issue. And I like the way that that's tackled as well. What I'm looking forward to seeing is, how is it that these kids living in this town aren't like, hey, I want to go to this, whatever, like a Nirvana concert. Like, the girl's got a Nirvana poster in her thing. You know? Why doesn't she want to, like, go see a concert or something? Because obviously she would have to leave this town to go do that. And they can't leave because the town it's a secret town. It's hidden in the middle of the mountains in Siberia. So, anyways, even through that, and I hope some of that is explored in a couple of issues, I love the story so far. I love the story, and the twists and turns are just absolutely fascinating. They're not completely telegraphed, but if you pay attention, you can kind of see where things are going, and I like that. The writing's great. The dialogue's fantastic. I love the flashback scenes going back to the Cold War as well, and yeah, thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying The Dead Hand. So if you didn't pick up the first issue when I talked about it, I guess last month, go ahead and pick up issues 1 and 2 now, because this book is really, really solid. It is... You know, I tweeted out tonight that this might be my favorite Image title out right now. I'm sure it is. So The Dead Hand, number 2, is going to be a 5 out of 5 for me. That shouldn't be no surprise from what I just said. Let's go into, I guess we'll do DC. I want to talk about Flash number 47. This is written by Joshua Williamson with art by Howard Porter, colors by Hi-Fi, letters by Stephen Wands, and... this is, of course, the prelude to the Flash War. Flash War will start in next issue, I guess in 2 weeks, with issue 48. And this kind of starts setting things up as to what the Flash War will be. So, you know, Barry Allen and Wally West are two Flashes from different times that are kind of collided. This has been kind of in the background of things developing over the last, well... 47 issues since DC Rebirth number 1, which was in 2016. So we're finally starting to see some of that. And the cool thing about Flash is, while it may not always be the strongest book, over the last, I don't even know, at least 5, 10, 10 plus years, 15 years, 20 years, maybe more, 30 years? I don't know. The Flash, because of his abilities, has always played a key role in shaping the way that the DC universe changes whenever they do these cycles, you know, like with Crisis and all that stuff. Flashpoint, I think, would be one of the biggest ones, right? And, of course, a lot of that, the repercussions of Flashpoint are being discussed in this book. And, of course, it might culminate with this this Flash War. But this is a great issue, though. Iris is apparently being hunted by the Renegades, for killing Eobard Thorn, the Reverse Flash. And, you know, she doesn't deny that she killed him. But, you know, Barry and Wally are kind of going at it, because as soon as they save the city from this monsoon, this giant wave, the Renegades show up. And I remember the Renegades from, when was the last time they were around? I want to say in, oh man, I think they showed up in the Flash Annual, which too long ago. But I remember they were in the New 52 Flash, I think. That was the Venditti and Van Jensen that were writing those. Anyways, the Renegades are from the 25th century. They're like the Reverse Rogues. And I like the joke that the current Wally West, not old school Wally West, makes in here. When the Renegades show up, he's like, what the hell? Like, do you guys just have reverse everything? Like, there's a Reverse Flash. Is there like a Reverse Kid Flash? And of course, there is a Reverse Kid Flash, by the way. But we're not going to talk about it today. And it was really interesting because, you know, the Flashes are kind of going against the Renegades, who are from the future. And a time judge has decided that Iris needs to go on trial for killing the Reverse Flash. And Wally doesn't want her to go, right? Because they're family and he wants to protect her. And anyways, ultimately, they decide that they're all going to go into the future. And some weird stuff happens because everyone goes to the jury room for Iris's trial, except for Wally West. He ends up going somewhere else. And I guess somebody toyed with Commander Cold's time machine thing and put Wally in a different place. And as it turns out, we learned that Zoom is the one that altered this thing so that he could befriend Wally West and try to fix the timeline. He shows Wally a whole bunch of stuff about his history with other flashes and, of course, entices him to join him because he's got Jay and Iris West flash costumes. Of course, those are Wally's kids, which he doesn't have now because of the whole weird timeline thing, the 10 missing years that we learned about in Rebirth, in DC Rebirth number one. So really interesting. I think my favorite thing about this issue was the Golden Guardian, who is the 25th century version of the Golden Glider from the current Rogues Gallery. And what was cool about her is she's got a Yellow Lantern ring, and she recites the Yellow Lantern Oath before she manifests these flashes to fight our flashes. So both Barry and Wally and the other Wally, Kid Flash. And it was so awesome to see that. And in particular, what it could actually mean, right? Because the Yellow Lanterns they're about fear, right? Fear-mongering. And of course, Sinestro, while he's kind of played a good guy, he's never been a good guy. But it seems that maybe in the future, the Yellow Lantern Charter has changed a little bit, where they can actually join a hero team. And I thought that was kind of interesting, the way that was handled. But having her recite the Yellow Lantern, awesome. The Sinestro Corps was really, really cool. So I hope we get to see more of the Golden Guardian. I thought she was absolutely fantastic. And the rest of the team is great. So really happy that I read the Prelude to the Flash War. Again, that's Flash number 47 from DC Comics. And I'm going to give it this is tough. I kind of want to do a half rating on this. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and do that. I'll give this a 3 out of 5 or 3.5 out of 5 because I thought it was a lot of fun. In particular, the stuff in the future with Zoom. I didn't much care for the back and forth between Barry and Wally. Wally's kind of, I don't know, he's a little annoying in this story. And I wish that wasn't the case because I do really like Wally as the Flash. But looking forward to seeing how the Flash War goes. And I got to tell you, man, whatever artist ever works on Flash, like, people are special. Because there's every single issue of the Flash, there's always so much going on in every single panel. And I don't even know how any artist, in particular doing, rushed schedule, the 2-3 week schedule, there's no. It is absolute insanity. But Howard Porter does a fantastic job in this. So really looking forward to seeing how Flash War goes. I've been kind of on and off of the Flash since it relaunched with Rebirth. But at least for the foreseeable future, while this stuff is going on, I will be very much looking forward to picking up every issue of that. With that said, let's go to Aftershock. Animosity, number 14. This is written by Marguerite Bennett with art by Raphael De La Torre. Colors by Rob Schraggy P. Schwager, inside joke, and letters by Marshall Dillon. And I don't know, there's not much to say about this. It's every single issue is really solid. And that's tough for, you know, once you get 14 issues in, to have a book be so consistent every month, it's kind of sickening. Shame on you, Marguerite Bennett, for being so damn good. This story really changes course with this issue, because a lot of So the first 13 issues, we've had kind of the animals be central character this book. And of course, that's still the case, right? But after the events of issue 13, Jessie, the little girl, is separated from her dog, Sandor, by Kyle, who has been kind of with the group for quite a bit of the story now. And he wants to take Jessie into the Walled City because it's a city run by humans. There's no animals there. And he feels that they're going to be safer there. But of course, he drugs Jessie to get her to fall asleep so she can get her away from the animals. He ends up fighting one of the goats and knocks the goat out and makes it to the Wall City. And unfortunately, Kyle may not make it out alive of this. They kind of don't say, but he looks like he might be on his last legs with what happens when they get to the Walled City. And it's really well done. This book has a lot of elements of like the really high level zombie stories that I really like. And I know people are like, oh, now I don't even care. I'm done with zombies. Listen, I get it. But the thing is, you know, when you're a really great storyteller and you play in those zombie movie tropes, they can be overdone. But because this is not zombies, this is the animal awakening, right? Animals becoming intelligent and talking and thinking, etc. The story plays quite a bit differently, and I think it works really well here. But this is very much, it's not an easy book to read. I mean, the dialogue's easy to read, but there's so much happening that you really got to spend some time and think about this book once you're done reading it. So if that's up your alley, I highly recommend it. I love Animosity, every single issue. There's another one, the Animosity Evolution as well. That's a companion book to this that's also really well done. But I think the Animosity proper, the main book, which is this one, is better than that other one. So with that said, Animosity number 14, excuse me, is going to be a 4 out of 5. Last two books I want to talk about are going to be Marvel books. Marvel books. And the first one is Infinity Countdown Dark Hawk, written by Chris Sims and Chad Bowers, who, of course, do Youngblood. And I really love Youngblood right now, so that's exciting. The art is by Gang Hyuk Lim, letters by Travis Lenham, and yeah, it's Darkhawk, dude. Like 10 out of 10 or 10 out of 5. What am I doing on these ratings? I really dug it. This is, of course, a tie-in book to the Infinity Wars, I guess is what they're calling it. Infinity Countdown's the prelude. They've got this mini, and there's a bunch of one-shots going into it. And this is the first time, this is the reintroduction of Darkhawk into the Marvel Universe. And I remember reading Darkhawk back in the 90s. I think it came out in like 93 or 94 is when the first Darkhawk came out. And I loved it back then. That was one of the books that I subscribed to. And for those of you unfamiliar with Darkhawk, he's got this amulet that allows him to gain these powers. He's got like the suit and fly. He can kind of adapt it, you know, with weapons and different abilities. He can upgrade it, and it's all through this amulet. And what the amulet does is it swaps his body with the body of this android in the null space zone, like an alternate dimension. But he can control the android, and I really like the way that they've changed it for this book. So it's still the same person as Darkhawk, but you know, he talks a little bit about how time has gone by, how the Darkhawk suit kind of has been gone from him, but recently it resurfaced. And we do get some setup as to why that is, because this is going to play heavily into stuff that's going on with the Nova Corps. And of course, the Darkhawks, the Brotherhood of the Talon, have escaped the null space. And I don't want to spoil it. I mean, it happens pretty early on, but there's some interesting twists that happen with characters that we've known over the last couple of years. A character which I didn't particularly like as a Nova is in this book. But even through that, I enjoyed it. I don't know if they're relaunching Darkhawk into his own book. Cause, you know, he had the solo book. I think he was in like New Warriors. He might have crossed over into Spider-Man a couple of points, if I remember correctly. I know he fought a few of the Spider-Man villains as well, in particular Hobgoblin. I think that was it's just a book that I really enjoyed. I like the way that Chris and Chad have changed the origin a little bit, and they play it as to the suit kind of evolving, the amulet evolving a little bit. And as it turns out, don't want to spoil that? Yeah, I'll spoil that. So, spoiler alert if you plan on reading Darkhawk. Whereas before, the bodies, he swapped bodies with this android, but he still controlled the suit. It turns out that that's not really what happens when he becomes Darkhawk. The Darkhawk amulet actually destroys his body. And whenever he's switches back to his human form, it recreates him from scratch based on, you know, whatever way the amulet stored it in its hard drive, I guess. So they made it a little less magical and much more tech-based, which, of course, I thought was cool. But it seems like the amulet's running out of hard drive space. How that goes, I don't know. Like, a tech device like this that can switch bodies and recreate matter from scratch, basically, doesn't have enough hard drive space. Seems weird, but I'm sure that will be tackled whenever, wherever the story gets continued. I do love seeing Darkhawk back, so I'm really glad that I picked this up. I almost didn't even get it, but I was flipping through and I was like, oh, Darkhawk. Why didn't anybody tell me that Darkhawk was coming back? So very glad that I picked it up. It's not going to be for everybody, but I did enjoy the updates to this. I'm not sure how this will tie in Infinity Wars. I kind of feel like that with a lot of these tie-ins, that I don't see how they tie in. But, you know, maybe we'll see once that actually launches. But I'm certainly glad to see Darkhawk back. For me, as much as I love this, I'm going to have to go a little bit on the lower end. 3.5 out of 5. For me, it was fantastic. And I got to tell you, the thing that really ups the score on this is the art. I don't know who this artist is. The name wasn't familiar to me, but it is so fluid and dynamic, gorgeous to look at. In some respects, some things look a little anime, but I should never say that when I talk about a book in a podcast, because I know some people are like, anime, I'm done, not reading this. Go find some preview pages, look through the previews. I thought this was really well done. Very, very, a lot of action, very hyperkinetic. I thoroughly enjoyed it. So, Infinity Countdown Darkhawk number 1 from Marvel Comics. Again, that's going to be a 3.5 out of 5 for me. And finally, Black Panther number 1, written by Ta-Nehisi Coates with art by Daniel Acuña. And man, that Daniel Acuña art. Whew. I don't know. I talk about Lee Garbett art and Daniel Acuña art on the same episode. My mind's just a little blown right now. The story, I don't even know what to say about the story. I'm a little confused. This seems to take place, I'm going to assume, in the future. It seems 2,000 years in the future. Now, I can't really tell. So I know that this... Let me continue before I go. Wakanda has decided that they are going to have a colony in outer space. Over the years, this colony begins expanding, and it becomes the intergalactic empire of Wakanda. Of course, you know, it's still run through the vibranium technologies that they have. That's what makes them so advanced. And I guess they've conquered many different solar systems. I think they say like 5 galaxies, but I could be mistaken. Maybe it's 5 solar systems. Anyways, huge empire that they have. And they seem to rule it with an iron fist. There's slavery and, you know, alien races being down. And of course, there's a separatist faction that wants to kind of get rid of this empire. All right, so with that said, again, a little confused, because from my understanding, this stemmed out of something that happened in Marvel Legacy number 1. So I went back and reread Marvel Legacy number 1. Didn't tell me anything about what happens in this. Matter of fact, I think the one page in Marvel Legacy number 1 that references the intergalactic empire of Wakanda is exactly the first or second page of this particular issue. Yeah, first page. So, wasn't too sure about that. The other thing that I see in here is, I don't know if this is actually T'Challa, or if it's a future person who they named T'Challa. Because again, I'm a little confused about the timeline. And this rebel group apparently takes names of people from Wakanda's past. Like, there's an M'Baku on here. And they named this guy T'Challa, which the main character in here, T'Challa, never talks. He's a slave in this empire, and he revolts. He kills a bunch of soldiers, and that's kind of how the rebels get him out of place, and he joins them in whatever they're... There's also, like, flashback scenes with a character, female character, that keeps saying, like, come back home to me, T'Challa. And to me, it seemed like that was Storm, because that's the only Black woman with white hair that I know at Marvel Comics. Like, if there's more, then please tell me, but I think that's the only one. And so, to me, it was Storm. Again, if this is so far in the future, how does that tie into the story? So, my assumption is that maybe none of this is actually happening in the future. I hope, Listen, I hope this is not the case, but it's giving me the feeling this is some kind of crazy timey-wimey story somehow related to the Infinity Wars, that stuff that's going to be popping up, because by having Wakanda in space, maybe it'll allow them to join into this crazy cosmic fight. Sure, that'd be cool, but I'm not sure. But with these flashbacks and these people that are people that we know, but maybe they're not people that we know, right? M'Baku and T'Challa, for example. I wonder if maybe, like, this is not kind of a dream. I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell. With that said, if I pick this book up and it was called something else, we're going to call it, I don't know, what can we call it? Wars in Space, okay? That's kind of a jab, by the way, because in some respects, the story does remind me of the Star Wars thing, right, with the rebels against the Empire. We'll see if that ends up being the case. But we'll call this Wars in Space. If it was called Wars in Space, then this was a really great issue. Really great issue. There's the pacing is fantastic. Dialogue's done very well. We get to meet a lot of characters, learn a lot about what's happening, even if we don't know exactly what's happening. And I think that's what the rub is, right? Because this is called Black Panther, it kind of makes me second guess what I'm reading, because I don't understand how this is related to Black Panther. But with that said, if it was called something else, I think this would have been great. The art is incredible. There's a ton of action. There's a lot of ass kicking in this book. So if that's what you want, this might be up your alley. And the world is very interesting. It's very complex, and I want to learn more about it. So with that said, I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5, because I thought it was really, really great. I do hope that it doesn't take many, many issues for us to know how it is that we got to this intergalactic empire of Wakanda. There's, you know, a couple of panels at the beginning that tell us a little bit of how we got here, but it's not enough to set up the story, I think. If this is actually a Black Panther story, is what I mean. So, 4 out of 5, fantastic writing, fantastic pacing, tons of action, great art. Why Black Panther? And that's about it. So, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Highly recommend anyone pick this up if you're a sci-fi fan. I saw a couple of comparisons to Exo Manowar, of all things, on the internet, which I thought was kind of funny. But it does have that vibe, right? The cosmic sci-fi dudes in space fighting bad dudes kind of thing. So, yeah, very interesting. I look forward to seeing how it goes. I've kind of dropped off of Black Panther books, but this one kind of has me very curious as to where it will end up going. So Black Panther number one, I don't even know what volume this, we'll say Black Panther 2018 number one, is going to be a 4 out of 5. And I think that's going to be it. That's a ton of books. Whew, I'm sweating from talking so much comics. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I will be back tomorrow with the news and, of course, the comic predictor. Because in 2 days is a new comic book day, and I have to let you know what I'm going to be picking up, and I hope you will be picking up as well. If you want to get in touch with me, you can, of course, find me on the Twitter machine, at Geekvine. You can email comictalktoday@gmail.com if you so wish. But the best thing for you to do is share this podcast with your friends on whatever podcatcher you use, leave an iTunes review or Google Play, whatever else you want. But most importantly, please, 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 share this with other people. Let them know about this podcast. And of course, communicate with me, because I love chatting with you guys online. That's going to wrap it up for today. Enjoy your holiday if you're in the U.S., and I'll catch you tomorrow.